Well, I'm very happy to be here today because the last time I was here, my good buddy Brent Hildebrandt was not in a very good position. And a lot of prayer and a lot of faith and a lot of God's healing grace between now and then. And he's here today and appears to be, at least at this point in time, probably disease-free. That's a miracle.
Amen. Praise
so,
God.
You know, when it says Hebrews 11:1, that faith is a substance of things unseen. It is evidence. I'm going to use that as Exhibit A. So, just how happy I am today to be able to give that little speech, which there for a while I didn't think I would be. So, all right. We're going to go on to the Sabbath.
Amen.
Which one do I hit, Brent? This? Yeah. Does it really matter? I'm hearing a lot, even from our church's Assembly Adventist pulpits, that it's really not important. It's which day. It's the fact that you're going to be spending some time with your Creator. And that's really what is. And they'll say, what is your faith tradition? Oh, your faith tradition is Sunday. Your faith position is Friday. Well, that's cool. All right? So, isn't it an arbitrary... Adventists have been saying for a long time that it's an arbitrary test of loyalty. When I was growing up, I would hear over and over again, well, the other nine commandments make sense, but the fourth doesn't. And so this is God's way to really find out those who are on his team. And so my question to my father was, I don't see everybody keeping the other nine. They're all breaking those. It's not like he goes, man, we have so many people there keeping the nine commandments. We need to really hone this down. We got to find out who the real followers are. Let's put an arbitrary test on, because you know the other nine make sense if you really logically look at them. Let's put something out there that doesn't make sense. And then if they agree, we know that they're true followers of God and they're kosher. Well, what is God, when we look in the Bible, what does God say about the Sabbath? He says, if you turn your foot away because of the Sabbath from doing what you please on my holy days and call the Sabbath a delight to the holiness of Jehovah, glorified and shall glorify him to the holiness of not doing your own ways from finding your own pleasure or speaking your own word, then you shall delight yourself in Jehovah and I will cause you to ride on the heights of the earth and make you meet with the inheritance of your father Jacob, for the mouth of Jehovah is spoken. So it sounds here like God is saying, you know what? If you keep this day, I'm going to make you rich and powerful. What about health? Well, he says, look, and he said, if you carefully listen to the voice of Jehovah, this is Exodus 15:26, your God, and do what is right in his eyes, and if you give ear to his commandments and keep all his statutes, I will not put on you all the diseases which I have put on Egypt, for I am Jehovah, your healer. So, okay, now wealth, power, health. Whoa, intelligence. And Jehovah shall make you the head and not the tail. This is Deuteronomy 28:13. And you shall be only above, and you shall not be beneath. If you heed the commandments of Jehovah your God, which I am commanding you today, to be careful to do them. If you read this the way the Hebrew is put into the Hebrew, it's what he's really saying is, you're going to be smarter than everybody else. Mm-hmm. All right, now here's the question. And I'm saying this not in any way sacrilegiously. I want to phrase a question and put it in a very simple way, so I'm not being derogatory. Is what God's doing here what I used to do to train my dog? I'd have some treats in my pocket, and when he would do something, like he'd do a trick, he'd do a backflip or whatever, I'd give him the treats. And does God have four treats, intelligence, power, health, and wealth? And if we keep the Sabbath, why, he hands out the treats? Okay. On what points did the devil particularly tempt the Jews of the Old Testament? Over and over again, it was the fourth and seventh commandment. We're not going to go with, on how the seventh commandment ties in, but I'm going to tell you, if you look at it from a genetic point of view, it just makes total sense. Now I'm going to give you a quote here. The author of Disease and Misery will assail men where he can have the greatest success. He is the smartest created being in all of God's vast creation. He's not stupid. He is not going to put his resources where he is not going to get the biggest return. So if he has taken special aim at the fourth commandment, something's going on. It suggests that it's not just a reward punishment thing, or, you know, we've really got to find out who's on our side here. They're all perfect down there. I mean, we got to winnow this down, find out who we can really let in. Something must be going on here for him to take all of his resources and put it against something like the Sabbath, something more than just it's an arbitrary test. So have Seventh-day Adventists misunderstood what the Sabbath is all about? Because you go and you say, okay, what makes us unique, brothers? They'll tell you the Sabbath, the investigative judgment, and the health message, all right? All that's good and fine. Yes, we should be partakers of it, but they shouldn't themselves become idols that we worship at. Do you believe investigative judgment? Oh, you believe what? Oh, well, you're not quite kosher. Or is there something else here that is hugely important that we need to look at? Because the devil thinks so. He's put a lot of resources on it. And we're told at the end of time, which we're going to get to it in the finish end of this talk, that he's going to put all of his resources against this day. Everything he owns, all of his time, energy, and wealth, and however we want to gauge that for someone like this, all of his political cash is going against this day. So there must be something here that is vitally important. One place where people get in trouble, especially in our church, is the important point assumed is that the law is not based in the physical creation itself. For instance, like a traffic speed limit, which you could change it at whim. What I'm saying here, and I don't want to get lost in the weeds, is that most people view God's laws as being extrinsic. God just picked them up and said, here's 10, and this is what I want you to do. And you look at the first 9, you could say, yeah, I think this makes happiness, and we can go for that. But actually, God could have made it 8 commandments, or he could have made it 11, but he chose 10. And what this is referring to is if you happen to live in a gated community, and everybody has there's a homeowner association, and they get together, and they every 6 months, and they vote on things, and someone can raise their hand and say, my child was playing in the street and almost got killed by a car. We have a speed limit of 35. I'd like to change it to 20. And everyone, is there a vote? And everyone votes, 20 it is. We do it. 6 months later, another child's almost killed. You know what they say? No traffic in here. So everyone votes, and now the law changes. No traffic. That's an extrinsic law. It isn't embedded in anything particular to the situation. It's an ends means to an end. We want to keep children safe. So therefore, it's an extrinsic rule, right? The extrinsic rules. Intrinsic is completely different. It's like the law of gravity, which is the force equals g over m1 times m2 over the radius squared. G is the gravity constant. You don't change that. That tells you how this law is set up. It's embedded in the very creation itself. It's not open to negotiation. And if it were, be thankful it's not. Because if someone came in and said, well, I'd like to change G, the constant. I've been trying to lose weight, and I'm getting very frustrated. So can we make it a smaller number? And there'd be a lot of votes. We probably would get a lot of people voting. There's a problem with that, though. First of all, the moon would spin out of its orbit and head out into space, and we would spin out from the sun, and we'd all die. And the other can also be true. Well, I'd like to raise it. I'd like to raise the gravitational constant, G. Well, then moon would come and crash into the Earth, and we would crash into the sun. It has to be exactly where it is, down to the, you know, what, one millionth, really, literally, it has to be that accurate, or we get into one of the two problems. Which is it? Is Sabbath, which rule is does Sabbath fall into? Is it in the intrinsic realm, or is it in the extrinsic realm? I just talked about this being, is it physical in the first place? Now we have a hint. Christ gives us a hint on all this. He says, think not that I am come to destroy the law or the prophets. I am not come to destroy, but to fulfill. And fulfill means to bring to their full maturation, to where they're supposed to be. So it doesn't mean that we're going to eliminate it. We are going to make it where it's supposed to be, up to give it the recognition it's supposed to have. And then it says, for I say unto you, till heaven and earth pass, one stroke or one pronunciation mark shall in no wise pass from the law till all be, and this word fulfilled. These are two different words in the Greek. This one means, in essence, till everything is accomplished. Till everything that's going to happen on this earth has happened. Okay, so the words fulfill in English really don't give us what the information is trying to come across. This means to make back, put it back to the way it was. And if you heard my other talks on genome and everything, you can quickly understand where that would fit in perfectly. And then this one says, until everything that's going to happen on this earth happens. So he's putting, I think this is a clear indication that Christ is saying, the rules I'm giving you are all intrinsic. They're built into the system. There's no wiggle room. We can't go in and start fudging them. We already talked before about on the salvation lectures, everyone says, well, to get to heaven, you've got to be asking forgiveness all the time. Remember, he gave everyone forgiveness at the cross when they were nailing his arms and his feet to the wood. He says, Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. Ellen White says that was for the whole human race. So we're spending time trying to get something from God which he's already granted. So that must not be what salvation is going to hinge on. It must be something else. I'm going to give you the most recent paper. There's a number of papers, and I'm not going to talk at length on what's in each one of the papers because you can look them up, and in the idea of brevity, we're just going to go after the basic ideas and you can come back and get them later. This was printed in 2016 in Chronobiology International. That's the big... There's a big association which does nothing but clocks. And what I'm going to do now is I'm going to take you into the world of genetic clocks for just a little bit. We're not going to get deep and lost in the weeds, but we're going to get into genetic clocks. And my goal at the end of this is for you to realize that everything depends on genetic clocks. Everything that lives. Everything that they do and everything... What they are is totally dependent upon the clock. I went a year ago almost to the day to the Salk Institute in La Jolla where they had the National Chronobiology Association met. And from 2017, there were two Nobel Prizes in science that were given out. And one of the laureates was there, and he got his, both of the awards had to do with the circadian clocks in general in biology. So this is a hot topic, and it takes the press a little while to pick up on stuff. It's going to come out there really big, and you're going to say, "I already knew about that." We're going to go into it today. I'm quoting from that paper here. I'm going to give you two quotes. It says, "We hypothesize the 7-day structure of human beings is endogenous in origin." I've got that in red for this reason. Endogenous means we don't know why, but it's built in the system. We cannot find out what triggers the clock, but it's in the system. And what they're talking about here, and I should have, let me back up real quick. It says 7-day human biological rhythm, an expedition in search of their origin, synchronization, functional advantage, adaptive value, and clinical relevance. There is a 7-day cycle built in everything that's alive. And that 7-day cycle is all coordinated together. So if you go to a plant or if you go to an algae, or if you go to a bacterium, we're all on the seven-day clock. And when it's Tuesday, we're all on Tuesday. It's not like we're on a seven-day, and you know, when you were born, your clock starts then. When you're born, you're actually, if you're born on a Tuesday, your clock, your seven-day clock, is actually set to Tuesday. So everybody is on the same clock. And it's throughout anything that's got DNA, which, but I would argue that if it's got DNA, it's alive. Anything that's got DNA has got this synchronization. And I'm going to show you a slide three slides from now where 19 years ago when they first really got into this, they thought that it was a number of different things. It'll tell you on that slide, and I'll tell you now why they're wrong. But the seven-day human biological rhythms is really called, it's called a circa septan, which means about seven. There's a circadian, which means about a day, okay? Our circadian rhythm is really about 23 hours and 50 minutes or something like that. So it always, it comes in a little bit short. That's why this circa septan is 6.75 days. So they're both a little bit short. There's a really good reason why that's the case. Makes all the sense in the world. We're going to get to that in a minute. So, the circa septan, the seven-day cycle, is a very important cycle. It's throughout nature. You can go down 2.5 miles on the ocean floor and pick up some of the bacteria that are down there near those vents that are, they don't use oxygen at all. They live off of sulfur and things of that nature. And they're on the same seven-day cycle you and I are. They've never seen the sun. They have no idea there is a sun. Or a moon. Let me stress this again. We hypothesize a seven-day time structure of human beings is endogenous in origin, a hypothesis that is affirmed by a wide array of evidence. It's there. Look up the paper and you can read it for yourself. And synchronized by social cultural factors. We'll come back to this, but look, linked to the Saturday Hebrews or Sunday Christian holy day of rest. I'm going to take just a moment here to talk about this, because one question a lot of people have as you're walking through this type of a presentation is, well, what if you're at the dateline and 1 week you're on this side of the dateline and the next week you're on the other side of the dateline? It can't be something endogenous now, can it? Wrong. Just real briefly, let me tell you how the circadian rhythm works, and then we'll just do an analogy to the circa septan. If I get on the plane and I fly to Paris, I'm off about, what is it? Well, if nine I hours. Go from Dayton, it's 8 hours. What is it here?
Nine hours.
Okay, so actually it's 7 hours for me then. Okay, if I go over there, am I stuck on Dayton or on California time if it's 9 hours? Do I stay on California time just indefinitely? And I'm, you know, I'm just getting up in the afternoon. The French are going home to eat. And now I'm ready to go out and have a good time. And it's 11 p.m. I'm saying, this is terrible. I'm never coming back to France again. Or what if I move there for the rest of my life? Do I go over there and I just can't get... I mean, you know, this isn't working. I can't work when I'm supposed to. No. That's where that shortened about comes in. Because every day, when you go out and you look at your retina, gets the wavelengths that come from the sun, of electromagnetic energy, or the two main ways of synchronizing your circadian rhythm is sunlight and when you eat. Okay? Mm-hmm. There's other things that also will affect it, but those are the two main ones that most everyone understands and we can go with. So, as you start getting up and watching the sunrise when you're in France, and then you go have some breakfast, after about 5 to 6 days, you're caught up, and that's now you're on your 24-hour rhythm. The circa septan is a 6.75 days, and the reason where is, the day you choose to observe, meaning you change your activity, and I'm just going to call it a day of rest, and you can define rest how you want, that synchronizes it. So if I go over to the dateline and I start instead of keeping Saturday over here, I keep with here. It's here. It would be Sunday. When I go over there, it becomes Saturday. My 7-day cycle re-equilibrates to the new environment. And everyone says, okay, well, that proves it's arbitrary. Because you see, it can float. No, it cannot float more than a day one way or on either side. And by the way, it picks up on Friday afternoon when you hit the peak, and I'm going to show you what the cycle looks like. Some of you should find that rings a bell. Otherwise, what would happen if you moved from one side of the date line to the other? Does that mean you're lost? Because now, what was Saturday, you're now keeping it as Sunday. Your friends on the other side of the date line, which is an hour away by boat, because it's down in the southern hemisphere, they're keeping a different date than you. Does that mean, if we just take Ellen White's quotes or the Bible's quotes directly, means you're in trouble? No. Because what you're missing out here is there's two parts to what happens on Sabbath. One part is our clock and what that's going to mean in a minute. But the other is, who's meeting you? When does he set his time? When does he say he's going to meet you? There's two parts to this equation. And no, he doesn't say, I meet you anytime, anywhere, and you get the same blessings that you would. It doesn't matter. He's a very clear, if you want to get some special, and I'm going to use the word downloads now to get you prepared. If you want to get the downloads I've got to offer you, I'm telling you when they will be sent. Mm. All right? So you have to have a sender and a receiver. The receiver will be receptive on a 7-day cycle, and the sender tells you when he is going to send it. These biological rhythms, wait, I think I forgot one. Here it is. I'm sorry. We also hypothesize that they represent, at least in part, the biological requirement for rest and repair 1 day in 7. Just as the circadian time structure is representative in part of the biological need for rest and repair every 24 hours. I'm just going to mention them in passing. You already know that the experiment that occurred in 1793-94 when the French Revolution took over, and they tried a 14-day week, they tried a 10-day week, and they tried a 5-day week, and all of them failed miserably. And then Stalin tried something of the same thing in a communist restaurant in the 1920s. They totally failed. Efficiency went down. The nation finally had to abandon doing that practice because they were falling behind. They didn't know that they were fighting an endogenous clock. Okay, these biological rhythms are displayed at various levels of organization in diverse species, from the unicellular sea algae to plants, to insects, to fish, to birds, to mammals, including man, under natural as well as artificial or constant conditions. I put red in constant because I want to explain what I mean by constant and how they discovered the Circus Septan in the first place. When premature babies are born, at least, and I think it's still that way at Loma Linda, but in many hospitals, what they do is they have a special C-section room where as soon as the baby, they're usually delivered by C-section because their heads are soft and they can't go through the birth canal. They take the baby and they open up a trap door and they hand the baby over to the NICU and they take the baby and the trap door is closed. Okay? The baby is put into a bassinet where it's under Billy lights. You know, Billy... I'm not going to explain that. Yeah. Billy lights 24/7, and they have little goggles on. They look really cool. All right? Everybody that comes in to see the baby has to put on a special garb that they put on in the NICU. The nurses wear the same uniform. The baby cannot see the clock because the shades are bright, are strong enough that it keeps the a lot of the light out. So the baby cannot see any clock. And what they found was that everybody in one NICU, all the babies had a 7-day cycle in blood pressure, galvanic skin response, basal metabolic rate, heart rate, a whole host of vitals. And they thought, well, maybe there's something that kind of, when they come in this room, that's synchronizing it. So they had some other NICUs do it. And then what they found out was all of these newborns, everywhere they look, were on a seven-day cycle. And not only was the day a seven-day cycle, but they all were at the same point on the cycle. And that's what I mean by constant. And that's what got them looking for the circus septan rhythm to begin with. Here's an old paper, 19 years old. And it is yet to be established by many more data than are now available whether in the early life of organisms, such as crayfish and rats and pigs, etc., and human babies, but that that there is they have a circus septum as a universal design feature. But very much more limited data on several other species suggests that this may be so. Well, they've now gone through all the many of the species, and they've proven that this fact. So this is an old paper, and I wanted to. But here's what I wanted to get to. Circus septans may be an exception of an internal integrative adaptation of the need to lock in with some intermediate frequency for the phenomenon of growth and regeneration that cannot be completed within a day but did not need a month for completion. If, as seems possible in view of the evidence thus far, circus septans and evolution preceded circadians. I'm going to stop here a moment. Why is that statement important? Because you see, evolutionists are saying now, we're trying to go back and find at the bottom. The most pronounced, the number one, the top dog of all the clocks that you have in your body, and we have many, is a circus septan. And the circus septan is what synchronizes all the other clocks. We synchronize our clock by, what is it, Greenwich, the Greenwich time station. Circus septan is the Greenwich time station for all the clocks in your body. So if it gets off, the other clocks are going to, one to some degree or another, they're going to be off too. And it says, it is important to know that they have a geophysical near match with a period of 6.75 days in geomagnetic disturbance. That's been just proven now. That's not what runs the clock. This harmonic of the rotation of the sun around its axis, that's also been looked at and been disproven. Apart from any lunar influence, that's true, there isn't, may be particularly important for forms of life developed perhaps at the bottom of the sea or Earth's interior, etc. So they're saying this has got, this paper thought that it had to do with geomagnetic disturbances, and there's other papers that have since shown that that's not the case. So, as they put here, bottom of the sea or Earth's interior, you know, you can dig down quite a ways and there's still bacteria down there. Those bacteria have never been out to see any type of an influence, a day, night, or week, or whatever. They're on the same clock. Here's what a circus septan, and this was in a baby. This was in one of the reports that was talking about the neonates. And it says here, about weekly changes in blood pressure and heart rate are invariably found to predominate over circadians in a group basis in human babies. So here again, it's telling you the circadian is the predominant cycle. And how can you know by looking at this graph? This part right here is the seven-day cycle. Sabbath would, for our Sabbath would be here. That's Wednesday. Okay? Now notice, you see these jagged lines? Those represent a circadian rhythm on any given day 15. That's the variance that they got in the blood pressure, or in this case, it was blood pressure and heart rate. So you see, which follows which? Do the circadian follow the circus septan, or does the circumseptan follow the circadian? No. The circadian follows and rides on the circus septan. So if the circumseptan, for whatever way, if we could come in and change it and move it down here, all the circadian would move with it. Now it says the emerging link between cancer metabolism and circadian rhythms. At the Institute I went to last January, I told you about, the Salk Institute. there were some very interesting statements made and evidence presented that the cancer is a clock problem, period. If we could get clocks fixed, we would probably do away with cancer. There's many clocks, and all the clocks, and there's other clocks that depend on those clocks, and we see it manifested in a lot of different ways in cancer, but it all started as a clock problem. And they went on further, and they said all disease is a clock problem. And after looking at their evidence, I think they're absolutely right. But we're not going to do that today. It's kind of hairy and long. But I promise not to do that today. Now, just here, here's a 24-hour circadian rhythm. I just want you to look at this. Your peak in alertness is at 10 a.m., unless you're a teenager, where the circadian clock is changed by the high doses of either testosterone or estrogen. In fact, they just wrote within the last year, a paper made national news that if a lot of high schools are changing till 8:30, the first class, and they found their students are doing a lot better because their clocks, they're dead zone to sleep at 7 o'clock, and they're virtually going to get nothing out of whatever you're exposing them to. And 8:30 is pushing it. If they really, if you read the paper carefully, this came from, school should start for them at 10 a.m.
From what age to what age?
Just said teenagers. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't give you the exact number. Teenagers need a lot of sleep. And I do remember when I was a non-school day and I didn't have to get up on Sabbath to go to church. Mm-hmm. So in the summertime or whatever, I would love to sleep till 11. And even then it was a trial to get me up. Mm-hmm. And really at midnight I'm at my best. And you could try to change that with all kinds of other means, and that's just where I wanted to live. That tells you how these clocks are, they are run by not only exogenous trigger points outside, but they're also run by hormones and by internal messages to change, in this case, your circadian rhythm. Your deepest sleep is at 2 a.m. if you're on this clock, if you're not a teenager. Peak in body temperature and blood pressure is at 7 p.m. You wouldn't have thought that. I didn't. And it says peak in lipid levels is at 6 p.m. So for you non-vegans who are eating a very fat-laden diet at 6 p.m., that's the worst time to eat it. If you're going to be eating that stuff, you should be eating it in the morning because you're packing your bloodstream just loaded now, and you want to make some atherosclerotic plaque, that's a good time. Got plenty. Hey, fresh, just off the truck. Cortisol secretion begins at 6 a.m. Well, I'm in anesthesia, so I'm usually get headed to the hospital close to that time. Mine starts at 5, and I know it because when I've been up all night, and 5 o'clock comes, I start feeling really pretty good. It wasn't, you know, the night's almost over. I could do it at 2 a.m. I thought I was going to die. And now, hey, I'm feeling pretty good.
Is there any information about elderly? Because a lot of my older patients, they go to sleep at 6 or 7 p.m. and they get up at 4.
I don't recall any papers directly.
It just seems like it's...
But I will tell you this, as you get older...
Yes. I can tell you as a sleep specialist. Yeah, it swings the other way when you get older.
Okay.
And I will tell you, there's a great place...
Testosterone.
If you want to... thank God for testosterone. If you want to look at this more, look for the suprachiasmatic nucleus, SCN. Go in and Google that. And look for the... BAL-1 clock CLOK-1 CLOK-2 clock 2. It will tell you how this thing all works. Those are the three main protein coding areas that code for the clock, and they themselves are under a special system that for in the circadian, for instance, can reestablish the circadian. So it's very complicated. It's Well, fabulously interesting.
There's one thing I'll say. Do you have the nadir temperature up there? It's like around 3 in the morning?
It says...
the highest is around 7, but the nadir, I think, is around 3.
It says peak in body temperatures at 7 p.m., and then it drops.
Right.
And in fact, if you're into sleep, you know that one thing you want to prepare yourself if you're having trouble sleeping is get cold. If you're hot at night, you're going to have a one heck of a time sleeping.
The interesting thing is that if you expose your eyes to bright light after the nadir, then it will advance your circadian rhythm. If you expose your eyes to bright light before the nadir, it will delay your circadian rhythm. Hmm. And it will do exactly the opposite if you do take melatonin. If you take melatonin before the nadir, it will advance your sleep cycle. If you take it after, it will delay it. So light and melatonin are opposites, and if you do one after the nadir, it does the opposite as if you do it before the nadir. So early light in the morning does exactly the opposite as late night light exposure.
And that's why my wife was having trouble sleeping, and we finally realized she needs to turn her computer off by 6 p.m., and then she sleeps fine. And it has to do, and if you go to France, be sure you go out and get sunlight. There's nothing better than sunlight to actually trigger the...
Well, as long as it's at the right time.
Yes.
You can actually calculate it. You can actually sit here and actually do the numbers to figure out where your circadian is on California time, but you're on this time. And so if you're going to France, then that means you want to advance your circadian rhythm to France's time. So the way you advance your circadian rhythm is exposing your eyes to light in the morning this time, but what really is the morning this time? It's in the afternoon over there. So you go out in the afternoon when if you're in France to expose your eyes to bright light, and you will catch up more quickly and have less jet lag. You can do the same thing when you're flying back in preparation too.
So it's clocks. It's fascinating.
Wow.
Now, we're not going to go into any of these papers as a special treat to everyone. I'm just going to tell you briefly what they say, okay? Mutual influence of sleep and circadian clocks on physiology and cognition. I will just tell you one thing from this paper, because then we're going to move on. If you've been up for 24 hours, and for the physicians in the group, you know, who think, hey, I'm all right, man. I was born and bred on this. I was weaned on this when I was a resident. You are operating as if you've had 2 beers. If you continue to work till noon, it's 3 to 4 beers, and after that, you're drunk.
I've been drunk many times.
Yes.
So do you want your physician drunk, making some very important decisions? And that goes along with the new rules that you are not to keep residents. They need to go home for 8 hours after if they've been anywhere close to 24. You've got to give them an adequate time to go home and sleep and recoup. Okay, rhythms of the genome, circadian dynamics from chromatin topology, tissue-specific gene expression to behavior. Fabulous paper. If you wanted to pick one out of this menagerie that I put up there, this is the one that I found just fascinating. It's 2018 December, so it's rather recent. And it's Trends in Genetics. And what it tells you, how you know how these clocks actually work? They take the your genome is in constant flux, and parts are opening and parts are closing, and it has to do with your ability for the genome to change things. Let me just explain real quickly why. Take the liver, for instance. The liver in a 24-hour cycle, and I'm only going to give you one of the cycles it goes through. During the day, the liver detoxifies your blood. It produces albumin. It produces clotting factors, except for 8. It does a number of things, right? But around just before about 6 p.m., a change occurs, and the liver shuts down, and it retools over the next hour every cell so that it breaks down all the factory-type stuff, and it rebuilds a whole new factory. And this new system is there to keep the blood glucose above 80, whatever your body sets it at. And you have glycogen, which was made during the day, and it now starts pulling the glycogen out, and it's testing the blood as it goes by all the time to make sure that the blood sugar doesn't fall. And every 24 hours, it goes through this same cycle over and over again. And you may say, well, wow, that's a lot of work. I mean, that's like taking a city of 50,000 people and busting it down and rebuilding it twice a day. But it's really brilliant because you see, you now only have, you have one organ that you have doing the job of two organs. It's in one spot. So we don't now have to have this huge body with all these organs going around doing every single job. Your brain, it does even multiple more things. And the liver does, there's multiple clocks in the liver. There's multiple cycles. I just gave you one. But they're all timed to each other so that they all interplay off of each other. So it allows us, it allowed the maker to add all kinds of complexity without having to add more space.
Encryption.
Pardon?
Encryption.
Yes, it's in the system to do it. And it, now it says, time to perfection, the biology of central and peripheral circadian clocks. It says disturbances, this is in Neuron, April 26, 2012, disturbances in the communication between the plethora of body clocks can desynchronize the circadian system, which is believed to contribute to the development of diseases such as obesity and neuropsychiatric disorders. Since then, this has been shown. This is one of the papers that was coming through. But I wanted to let you know, I was giving you just a smattering to tell you how the clocks in your brain are just as important as the clocks in your liver. And if you don't think so, try going 72 hours with sleep deprivation and see how much you can remember and see how much you can, how well you can think through problems. One paper, and they made a statement, and I don't know how they verified it, they said if you can keep someone truly awake for 1 week, they die. And I was trying to figure out, now, how did they come to that conclusion? And I didn't quite find it. So I'm putting that out there with a disclaimer. Check it out for yourself. But no. It's an interesting thought, okay? Yeah. It's just an interesting thought. I don't know if they die or they wish they were dead. One of the two.
Well, actually, there is actually some examples of that. I've heard recently people who like to do gaming.
Yeah.
They'll have these gaming marathons.
Yeah.
And I've heard of a couple of stories, you probably have seen it as well, where these were young people, and they were doing these game marathons where they're all in there, and one of them died. Because it just kept going.
Maybe that's what they were, maybe that's what they were pointing to. Driven by cellular clocks distributed across the body, this is Nature Reviews, Neuroscience, August 2018. Driven by cellular clocks distributed across the body, these rhythms adjust us to the world by preparing the brain and the other tissues to perform very different, often incompatible functions. Now, this is important. I wish I would have underlined the next part of this, but I didn't. I was sleep deprived. appropriate to the anticipated day or the anticipated night. Your body is on the clocks to prepare your body and your mind and everything that you are to deal with what is anticipated going to happen at that part of the day. Mm. Now let's look at this commandment now. Let's look at it through different eyes, okay? So let's go back and look at where the enjoinder is. It says, remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. 6 days shall you labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is the Sabbath of the Lord your God. In it you shall not do any work, you, nor your son, nor your daughter, nor your manservant, nor your maidservant, nor your cattle, nor your stranger that is within your gates. For in 6 days the Lord made heaven and earth, the sea and all that in them is, and rested the seventh day, why the Lord blessed the seventh day and hallowed it. Now you've often heard, Ellen White writes, that the seal of the living God is in the fourth commandment. So I want to just take a moment and tell you what a seal is. The kings back in the time of biblical times used to have a big ring. And on that ring was engraved a seal. And the seal would have three things on it. It would tell you the name of the king. It would tell you what before charity. It would tell you was he the top dog? Or let me use Daniel as an example. Yes, if you, it's the rank. If Daniel had his ring, he would have one, and on that would be in graven in his name, and that he was the governor of the Sushan province. So it's a governor, so that's his rank, and then Sushan province is the area in which he has been delegated the power to work, right? And then what happened, they would write a proclamation, they'd put wax on it, and he'd take the ring and go like this. And remember with Pharaoh and with Joseph, what did Pharaoh do? He took the ring off his finger and said, "You got it." What he was really saying to Pharaoh was, "You can make all the rules now. And you can use my ring. So, you know, it's going to come out under my name, my authority." And, of course, he felt that his region was the world. So that's what Pharaoh did. So this means a lot. Well, let's look at the fourth commandment. It says, it identifies who this person is. It's the Lord your God. And it tells you by what authority? Because he made you. And what is the geographical location? Well, it says heaven and earth, which means universe. Mm-hmm. Okay? So he's saying, look, I'm your God. I'm the one that brought you out of Egypt. Where do I get my authority from? Because I made you. Mm-hmm. In essence, he could have said, I own you, but he just says, you know, I made you. And where's my authority? Mm-hmm. It's everywhere. It's the universe. And I'm going to just put a little thought in your mind right now. When we get to the end, I'm going to at least give you my hypothesis, the reason behind. I think the Circus Septan rhythm is a universal phenomenon. I don't think it's just on this earth. I think the entire universe is on that same cycle. And I know someone's going to say, well, what about the big planets where we know theory of relativity says time slows down? So how could everyone be on the same cycle? And my answer to that is, if the guy who made the system and made the theory of relativity probably knows how to adjust things so that everything synchronizes, I'm just guessing. And I'm not going to worry about that. If he can produce the system, doing small tweaks to the system is no problem. Now, what is it that he is decreeing now? I'm going to say this. I told you it's a hypothesis, so I've put my disqualifier on it, or my qualifier on it. You're to rest on the seventh day, our seventh day, and our time frame. And that's what he's saying. And he gave you his seal, told you why. Now, why would he do it in this one, this commandment? Why wouldn't he do it in, say, commandment number one? I am the Lord your God. And then zoom right into this. That'd be a good place to start, wouldn't it? The nine things that are following from here, you better know. I'm the top dog. This is what I made. I made you. This goes to, my words again, the whole universe. And you listen to the nine things that I'm going to say there. And you didn't have to pick out the seventh day. You could have just said, everything's important. Do all the other nine. We know, the Bible will tell us, let's look at the Bible. We know from Romans 4:11, where Paul says, and he received a sign of circumcision, a seal of the righteousness of the faith, which he had yet being uncircumcised, he's talking about Abraham, that he might be the father of all of them that believe, though they not be circumcised, that righteousness might be imputed unto them also. I'm not talking about Abraham here. I wanted to point out this text, because in essence, the Hebrew way of parallelism, Paul is using the sign and the seal are interchangeable. So when we're going to go look in the Bible, we're going to see that wherever we see sign or seal, we can interchange those two because they, in essence, are meaning the same thing. Ezekiel 20:12 says, moreover, also I gave them my Sabbath to be a sign, so we could put the word seal, couldn't we? To seal between me and them, that they might know that I am the Lord, that sanctify them. And then, 8 verses later, he says, and hallow my Sabbath, and they shall be a sign or seal between me and you, that you may know that I am the Lord your God. Okay, what's he saying here? He goes, you know what? The fourth commandment is, what I'm giving you is evidence that I'm the one that can sanctify you. Let's translate this into more genetic talk. I can undo the damage that's been done to your code system. And why is that true? Because I made it. And if you didn't make the system, you can't trust someone to come in and fix it because it's way too complex. And he's saying, when he uses the word seal, he's saying, and so I'm referring you to the fourth commandment. I'm calling it here. I'm telling you it's the Sabbath, but I'm telling you, remember, that's where I put my seal. Go look at that. And that's going to be my evidence behind my claims. Now,
and we thought this would be a great test bed for learning how to get chromosomes out.
We'll start automatically. Or do
I back up one more.
Okay. I'm going to show you a video here. This is Greg Bittner. He's the guy along with, he wrote the Language of God.
Dawkins?
Not Dawkins.
No. His name just went out of my brain. All of a sudden here.
Head of NIH.
He's head of the NIH now, and I can tell you all about him, but I can't tell you his name. Together, they were in 2000, close to 2001, they were racing to come out with the total genome, mapping the genome is what it was called. And so they were racing against each other, and they, I don't know who called who, but they said, hey, Greg Bittner was doing it from a non-government side, and Francis Collins was doing it from the government side, and they said, let's get together and let's announce it together, because both of us are so close, and we don't want to rush and try to get one to beat the other by a nose, and then let's both, you know what I mean, let's both take credit for it. And so this is Greg Bittner. He's the one that raised a lot of money privately to try to get this done, because they felt that they would then be able to monetize the information and cure a lot of diseases, and you'd be paying them a royalty, which probably wouldn't get through the Supreme Court right now, because there's certain things which are exempt, and this would be one of them, but I'm not a lawyer. So anyway, he is talking about something, I think it was 2000 and, it's like 14 or 15, somewhere in that area. There was a big blurb in the science journals that Greg Bittner and created life. It's not true. What he did was he took a bacterium, which is Mycoides, and what he did is he took the DNA out of it, and he mapped it. He got all the 1 million approximately letters, genetic letters, which are adenine, thymine, guanine, and cystine, and he mapped it, the whole thing out. Then he went and he manufactured it from its basic ingredients. So he took some adenine, some thymine, and the whole business, and he made it. And then he thought, well, you know what? And he's going to tell you the story of how he does it here. And so I'm not going to spoil that part of you, but I want to explain when he talks about watermarks. What does he mean by watermark? Well, a watermark, he started thinking, you know what people are going to say? I got over the tip of my skis. Let me go back. He made the genome for the Mycoides. And then what he did is he went to another type of bacteria. It doesn't matter the name. He'll give you the name, but I want to make it real simple so you can understand what he did. He took the DNA out of that bacteria, and he put his synthesized Mycoides DNA into that bacteria, and it changed the bacteria into a Mycoides. Okay? But he had made, he had taken the ingredients and like a recipe, and he had made the recipe, and it now took over a completely different bacterium and changed it into the recipe he had made. So he didn't create life. The cell was already there and alive. He took out the instruction booklet that came with the original one. He put a new instruction booklet in, and the cell obeyed the commands, and now he changed the bacteria. Okay? So, but I want you to listen to the watermarks, because he said, how am I going to prove that I did this? All right? That I didn't just go out there and get some a regular bacteria, and I just told everybody that I changed it to a mycoides. I really didn't do it. I just said I did. How could I prove that I really did it?
And we thought this would be a great test bed for learning how to get chromosomes out of yeast and transplant them. When we did these experiments, though, we could get the chromosome out of yeast, but it wouldn't transplant and boot up a cell. That little issue took the team 2 years to solve. It turns out the DNA in the bacterial cell was actually methylated, and the methylation protects it from the restriction enzyme from digesting the DNA. So what we found is if we took the chromosome out of yeast and methylated it, we could then transplant it. Further advances came when the team removed the restriction enzyme genes from the recipient Capricolum cell. And once we've done that, now we can take naked DNA out of yeast and transplant it. So last fall, when we published the results of that work in Science, we all became overconfident. We're sure we were only a few weeks away from being able to now boot up a chromosome out of yeast. Because of the problems with the Mycoplasma genitalium and its slow growth, about a year and a half ago, we decided to synthesize the much larger chromosome, the mycoides chromosome, knowing that we had the biology worked out on that for transplantation. And Dan led the team for the synthesis of this over 1 million base pair chromosome. But it turned out it wasn't going to be as simple in the end, and it sent us back 3 months because we had one error out of over 1 million base pairs in that sequence. So the team developed new debugging software where we could test each synthetic fragment to see if it would grow in a background of wild-type DNA. And we found that 10 out of the 1,100,000 base pair pieces we synthesized were completely accurate and compatible with a life-forming sequence. We narrowed it down to one fragment, we sequenced it, and found just one base pair had been deleted in an essential gene. So accuracy is essential. There's parts of the genome where it cannot tolerate even a single error. And then there are parts of the genome where we can put in large blocks of DNA, as we did with the watermarks, and it can tolerate all kinds of errors. So it took about 3 months to find that error and repair it. And then early one morning at 6 a.m., we got a text from Dan saying that now the first blue colonies existed. So it's been a long route to get here, 15 years from the beginning. We felt one of the tenets of this field was to make absolutely certain we could distinguish synthetic DNA from natural DNA. Early on, when you're working in a new area of science, you have to think about all the pitfalls and things that could lead you to believe that you had done something when you hadn't, and even worse, leading others to believe it. So we thought the worst problem would be a single molecule contamination of the native chromosome, leading us to believe that we actually had created a synthetic cell when it would have been just a contaminant. So early on, we developed the notion of putting in watermarks in the DNA to absolutely make clear that the DNA was synthetic. In the first chromosome we built in 2008, the 500,000 base pair one, we simply assigned the names of the authors of the chromosome into the genetic code, but it was using just amino acid single letter translations, which leaves out certain letters of the alphabet. So the team actually developed a new code within the code within the code. So it's a new code for interpreting and writing messages in DNA. Now, mathematicians have been hiding and writing messages in the genetic code for a long time, but it's clear they were mathematicians and not biologists, because if you write long messages with the code that the mathematicians developed, it would more than likely lead to new proteins being synthesized with unknown functions. So the code that Mike Montague and the team developed actually puts frequent stop codons, so it's a different alphabet, but allows us to use the entire English alphabet with punctuation and numbers. So there's four major watermarks, all over 1,000 base pairs of genetic code. The first one actually contains within it this code for interpreting the rest of the genetic code. So in the remaining information in the watermarks contain the names of, I think it's 46 different authors and key contributors to getting the project to this stage. And we also built in a website address so that if somebody decodes the code within the code, they can send an email to that address. So it's clearly distinguishable from any other species, having 46 names in it, its own web address. We added three quotations because with the first genome we were criticized for not trying to say something more profound than just signing the work. So we won't give the rest of the code, but we will give the three quotations. So the first is to live, to err, to fall, to triumph, and to recreate life out of life. It's a James Joyce quote. The second quotation is, see things not as they are, but as they might be. So it's a quote from the American Prometheus book on Robert Oppenheimer. And the last one is a Richard Feynman quote, what I cannot build, I cannot understand. So we tried to build a little bit of, because this is as much of a philosophical advance as a technical advance in science. We try to deal with both the philosophical and the technical side.
Okay. I'm going to now tell you, I'm going to put forth a hypothesis that God's watermark, to prove that he's your creator and my creator, is what he put in the seven-day cycle. Do you ever see anyone in the Bible, the devil or anyone else, coming around saying God's not the real creator I am? Nobody takes him on that topic. He's let it be known there's a seven-day cycle and everything, and none of you even know where it is in the genome. You don't even know how it's synchronized. You don't even know how I put it in there. I called this ahead of time. I said this when Adam and Eve were created. I let everyone know they're on the same seven-day cycle. Therefore, there can only be one creator in this, me. The devil, as far as when you read the Bible, has never challenged God about who the creator is. James tells us in James 2 that the devils believe in God and they tremble. So, that's why, if the fourth commandment isn't true, you can forget about the other nine. He's not the creator then. He's a usurper, or at least he's someone that claims he is, and he's not presenting any evidence that would be convincing to you that he is who he says he is. And if he's not who he says he is, why would you care about the other nine anyway? And if he is what he says he is, then he's the only one that can help you keep the other nine. So the fourth is in the middle, and it is true, all the other commandments hang on it. Whoops, I'm going to go back here. Is it possible that the circus septan rhythm prepares our brains to meet with our creator? So, okay, fine and dandy. He did a real great engineering feat. We give you that. But so what? So, okay, we're going to see he's a creator. But you know what the creator does? He never takes one thing. Everything he does has multiple purposes, and it does multiple functions. I talked about the liver. But we could talk about any of the organs. They all do this great, incredible, like a choreographed dance that makes us live every day, and we don't even think about it. Now, we've talked about this one earlier, and it says, and I will cause you to write it. Let's go before that. If you call the Sabbath a pleasure and a delight. Now, it says the holiness of Jehovah, glorified and shall glorify him. That's important. Remember I said there's two parts to this equation. One part is you've got to have the human beings receptive. And the other part is you need a sender. So now I'm going to finish out this hypothesis. I'm going to use my iPhone as an example. This is an allegory. So if you want to try to pick it apart and say, but this isn't exactly the same, I know that. Let's just go with the allegory part, okay? This is here to illustrate a point. I just have a new i10, so I don't know if it's the same as the i6 that I just got rid of to get this i10, but the i6, it would tell me we need to do a new iOS download to upgrade your system. And it would kind of negotiate with me a time, because I couldn't be on the phone during that time. The phone had to be plugged in, and I need to be on a Wi-Fi service. All right? And they would tell me, and I would put in a time, and we would come to an agreement when that this delivery would occur. And, you know, sometimes I forgot, didn't turn my phone on at night. It was supposed to happen at 2 a.m., and they'd send me some warranted, what were you doing? We now have to do this again. Why is that? It's because the bandwidth on my phone couldn't take the data surge that was coming into the phone and still be doing everything else it did. That's where we are, especially with our sin-dwarfed CPU, central processing units. Our bandwidth is not large. And if God wants to download information to you, and this information I'm talking about at the molecular level, we're going to talk in a moment here about a little bit about the Holy Spirit and what the Holy Spirit does. That information has to be sent to your system, and you have to take it in. And I'm going to give you a Bible text which I believe suggests that, and I would use as my evidence, okay? Texts, I should say. So if you're busy using your system, doing your own pleasure, doing business, doing something else like that, and he is in the download mode to you, you aren't going to get it. Remember he said on the Sabbath day, I'm the one who sanctifies you. I'm going to tell you, there's a connection there. Sanctification and Sabbath are tied at the hip. And physiologically, I spared you going through the changes that occur in the brain on the circadian rhythm. But there's enough clues that cognition has to be involved, because emotions are—they're on a circadian rhythm. It's just they don't know how to ferret out the information that your cognition abilities in one area or another change. We don't have science that's precise enough to do that. So you can't go there. We don't know. But if the guy who just gave us proof by reading this word that he was the creator, he set up the system in the first place, says it so, my guess is it is. Because all the other stuff, emotions and all kinds of other things, perceptions, ability to remember, all those other things are all tied up on the circumceptant. And SIDS occurs more on Saturday. 80% of SIDS occur on Saturday. Sudden infant death syndrome, for those of you who know what that is. And if you look at the next two highest days, it's Friday and Sunday. So I think there's a pattern there. He provides the information for the downloads, and he is sending the downloads. It's do you have your receiver turned in to get them? Proof text number one, well, supporting text. There's no proof here. It's supporting text number one. For as the rain, no, notice rain. We're going to come to that again in a moment. As the rain cometh down and as the snow from heaven and returneth not thither till it has moistened the earth and fertilized it and made it green and offered seed to the sower and bread to the eater, so will my word be which goeth forth out of my mouth. It will not return to me fruitless till it is accomplished that which I will and purposely carried out that for which I sent it. Now think about that. Think of what he's saying there. He said, seed to the sower. Well, that word seed is zera, which if you're going to look for a Hebrew word for genetics, that's as close as you're going to come. They didn't have a word for genetics. They didn't know about it, but it meant a certain type of a hereditary which was genetically determined. And notice what it has. It actually makes things happen. It makes bread for the eater, seed to make more fruit grow. What do we call in the New Testament? Fruits of the Spirit? Mm-hmm. Why does the Spirit have to dwell in you? Remember we talked about before that faith is your receiver that God has to put in your brain to get this information? If you want to look it up, it's Romans 12:3 and Hebrews 12:2, I believe, or I might have flipped the two last. It might be 12:3 for Hebrews and Romans 12:2. But look those up. God clearly says, "I give you faith. You don't have it." And what did the disciples ask in Mark 9? They said, "Lord, help our faith." And God says, "Okay." Christ said, "I will." You don't ask someone to give you something they don't have or they can't evoke. And grace is this information download we're talking about. It's not unmerited favor. I can give you a text in 2 Peter 3, the last verse, that says, grow in grace. How do you grow in unmerited favor? You grow in grace, and if you look at 1 Corinthians 12, and you look at Ephesians 4, you're going to find out grace has to do with giving you fruits of the Spirit, which are characteristics and traits which are genetically determined. Paul says, I was genetically made to be a preacher. By God's grace, it made me his preacher. We don't have time to get into that today. I'm just going to tell you there's ample evidence in supporting what I just said. So, if this is true, then what we're dealing with is that these downloads, if your brain is, and my brain is on a 7-day cycle, which we have now synchronized because we start at the prescribed time, he says, and he is now giving downloads on that day. If we are receiving those downloads, well, just how important is that? I mean, someone will say, well, you're limiting God. He can do it 6 days a week. No, I'm not limiting him. He's limiting him. He's the one that said, and I rested the seventh day. Why would he include that? He's not resting or the whole gravity and everything that we go into smith, we blow apart on the seventh day, if that's the key. What he's saying is, I change my activity so you change yours because we got some communicating to do. Okay, what's the final test of the time of trouble? What's the last test that's going to come upon the world? What does Ellen White say? It's the Sabbath, isn't it? Remember I talked to you earlier about the devil putting resources? Why would he put all the resources to stop that day? He's betting the farm. He's not covering his bets with other things like, and I'm going to push for having immorality. We're going to do some type of a swinging couples on Sunday. You know what I mean? That's what he was doing in the Old Testament. He's now put all of his money on this. He's smart. There must be a reason. Why is it? I'm going to read something from Ellen White. It says, the time of trouble is soon to break upon us. This is Signs of Times, June 2, 1890. The time of trouble is soon to break upon us, and the decree will go forth that everyone who will not keep the first day of the week shall be put to death. So he's putting everything on this, right? Those who have not regarded the Sabbath as they should, who have exalted their business above God's commandment, who trample upon the Sabbath and keep the first day of the week, keep the first day of the week, got that? They're resting that day. Because they have consulted their own convenience before the honor of God, they did not learn to bring themselves into harmony with the Sabbath, but sought to bring Sabbath to meet their own convenience. Now here is the statement I really wanted you to get out of it. With the preparation, notice preparation, that they have made, they are no more fitted to stand in the day of judgment than the greatest sinner. I'm going to tell you what I think this says. If you have not gotten the downloads on Sabbath faithfully every week, you are not going to be made capable of going to heaven. Now someone's going to say, what about all the people who died and kept Sunday? John 15, Christ says, if I had not come and talked to them, then they would not have a cloak for their sin. And remember, you can, if you use Sunday, if you set your clock on Sunday, your circumceptive clock changes. And if the person honestly believes that Sunday is the Sabbath, I believe the Lord gives them the downloads that day. So this isn't a, this doesn't break the deal. And it shows you the system can accommodate people who aren't given all the facts. They can still get the benefit until they get the facts, at which time, if it, then they turn it down, it's a different story. And Christ made that clear in the book of John in chapter 15. This is how it works. So, this preparation, it's as if they are not prepared any more than those who never kept any day or kept Sunday. All right? They're no more prepared if they've been keeping Sabbath but not following everything that I've said here. They've not made their mind open to the downloads. They have kept it cluttered doing other things. Their CPU bandwidth is limited, and God's trying to get through, and nothing's getting through. What about the latter rain? Notice rain. Remember, I had it earlier in Isaiah 15. I'm going to suggest to you that the latter rain is going to come down on Sabbath primarily. That doesn't mean that it won't work on other days of the week. But Sabbath is going to be the main day because your brain is in the receiving mode and he's in the delivery mode. Now, why is the latter rain so important? Well, I'll give you two reasons that Ellen White says it's important. Number one, it prepares the saints to stand in a time of trouble when there will be no mediator. In other words, Christ is not serving as a filter between you and the devil, and we will be treated as Job was treated when God said to him, you can do everything but kill him. And so how could God make that claim? How could God make that claim and know he was right? He knew Job had received downloads that would do this. The ceiling that Ellen White talks about is being so set in your, she puts it in the truth, that you cannot be moved. That talks about brain circuitry. Brain circuitry is absolutely 100% controlled by your DNA. I gave you illustrations in the last talk, so refer back there if you'd like to get refreshed on that. Therefore, I say that your sealing process is going to the bulk of it is going to occur on Saturday. Here's the second reason. The saints, Ellen White says, the latter rain prepares them to meet Christ when he comes. Now, a lot of us say, well, that means they're good people and everything else. No, 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 no. What happens when Christ comes? Everyone that has not been prepared in this way is running and jumping off of cliffs and asking the rocks to fall on them, and they're being slayed by the sword that comes out of his mouth. There's a small group
very small remnant that are running toward the cloud that's coming and saying, yes, this is it. This is the one we've been waiting for. Fantastic. It permits them to run toward God's presence and not try to get out of there as fast as they can and be willing to commit suicide to the brightness of his coming is so obnoxious to you that you'd rather die than get any closer. And that's, we don't, that topic has a very good genetic basis to it. Just leave it there. Okay? So, this is taught, the latter rain is changing yours and not only our brains, but our bodies to prepare us for when Christ comes, for the 144,000. Now do you see why the devil is going after Saturday? That's where the money is. That's the whole game. That's why the Sabbath is the final, is made the final test at the end of time. Because everything rests on it. Everything that's going to happen is predicated on it. That's why the saints will die in order to desecrate it, rather than desecrate it. For as the new heavens and the new earth, which I will make, shall remain before me, saith the Lord, so shall your seed and your name remain. And it shall come to pass that from one new moon to another, from one Sabbath to another, we shall all come and worship before me, saith the Lord. This is one of my supporting texts, which I say the universe is on this. Because when we get up there, if you're getting up there and you're going, oh, good, no more Sabbath, I'm telling you, I don't have to worry about that 24. This is great. Wrong. When you get up there, we're going to have not only the clocks, we have more, but I think a lot of clocks are going to be given to us. What does it say in 1 Corinthians 2? I have not seen or ear heard the things which God has prepared for those who love his and adore his coming. That means there are a lot of new things are going to change. We're going to get a lot of new code. And those things are going to have to be synchronized. You'll never not, this is bad English, there will never be a time when you will not need to synchronize and get more downloads. As information is going out through the universe, you're going to the source to get the downloads. So know, when Sabbath is coming, people are going to head for the New Jerusalem, and they're going to be vying to get there in the front seat. This is a big day. There's all kinds of fabulous, positive things that are going to happen. You wouldn't give it up for all of the gold in heaven. It's, as they say, it's in our DNA. It's who we are. And it proves who made us and who will synchronize us and who will keep us for eternity. We're done.